is the New South Wales Country Hour with Michael Condon on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Hello again. Welcome to the show. Coming up, we'll still be focusing on the flooding. Unfortunately, farmers across the Liverpool Plains and the northwest, they're frustratingly still waiting for those floodwaters to recede properly and allow them to get a better handle on the crop and infrastructure damage.
Yeah, look, I'd like to think by mid-late this week we should be able to get around a bit and get into some of these paddocks and see what's the damage really is. Look, honestly, we just don't know for the meantime until we can get out there.
Yes, indeed. We'll have to. The waiting game continues. You can always let us know what's happening at your place. Getting quite a few texts about the flooding, what's happening around the place. 0467 922 684 is the number to text me here at the Country Hour. But first up, let's find out what's happening in regards to those floodwaters receding. That damage bill, still impossible to calculate, according to the experts. Our reporter, Lara Wiss, has been travelling around the region. Normally based in Tamworth, she's been travelling around looking at the damage and has seen that has impacted far and wide today. She's travelling near Gunnedah. She said the floodwaters are receding, but farms are isolated, towns are cut off, of course, as we've been hearing, and roads are cut and also in pretty poor condition as a result of the flooding too. I asked Lara a short time ago to explain where she was and what she's seeing at the moment.
Yeah, g'day Condo. Look, I am about 10 kilometres out of Gunnedah on a farm we managed to get to, and at the moment, I'm looking at a wheat crop that has certainly seen some better times. There's patches of grey, almost black wheat. Some of it's laying down. This wheat crop in front of me, the farmer I was speaking to was saying this had great potential. It was a cracking crop. And now they're fairly confident it will be, downgraded to feed. And there will be patches that certainly won't be harvestable at all. So a story we're certainly hearing, Condo, right across the north here and even to areas of the Liverpool Plains where they haven't begun to harvest, but they're expecting downgrades there as well. And, of course, to Narrabri too. On this farm as well, we have livestock, Condo, where Chris, the farmer here, he's had stock. He's been having to move constantly. He's thought he's had them on high ground, and we spoke about it yesterday, but these renewed peaks have just kept getting higher. So he and some neighbours had to get on horseback and move their cattle through some water and get them to higher ground again. On the upside, Condon, we've heard a bit of this. It's a bit of a mixed bag. He's got a lot of pasture for his stock now, and he showed us his sorghum crop on the way into his property, and his sorghum crop's actually still standing up quite well at this point, and we've heard a bit of that hopefully those more advanced summer plantings will hold up with sorghum and cotton, with sorghum and corn. Cotton is certainly not enjoying this cooler weather. It wants some warm days. It doesn't mind the water, but it needs the heat now. So, yeah, it's a very mixed bag. Certainly farmers are disappointed, and this winter crop was one that would get many out of debt, we were told, but look, people are holding on to hope that on terms of livestock they've got good pasture and a lot of water storage, and hopefully some of these summer crops can pull through as well.
And the water is actually receding, the flood waters are receding.
That's right, Condo. So we're seeing the waters around Gunnedah start to recede. They've receded quite a bit this morning, and hence why we're able to get out to a couple of farms today as well. That water from here is now moving through to Narrabri. We saw the water around Narrabri peak yesterday. It's expected not to exceed the levels there that it did yesterday. And of course, that water, as we know, is moving on to Weewar as well, Condo, which has been isolated and will continue to be for some time. And we have a lot of farmers still isolated from the Liverpool Plains across Gunnedah and into Narrabri and Weewar. So we've seen a lot of farmers also having food drops for their families because they're running out of food, and seeing a lot of neighbours help each other out and check on each other too. But good to see the floodwaters receding here. The concern, of course, is that there is more rain forecast, Condo, and I think everyone's just really crossing their fingers that maybe the bomb is wrong this time and we don't see some of the falls that are predicted and we can just get some dry, warm weather. It's certainly a turnaround from 18 months ago.
Yeah, the Bureau is saying, though, it could be 100 millimetres in that part of the world. And how would people cope with that?
Look, I think people are trying not to think about it when I chat to them, Condo. I think I was speaking to one farmer in terms of her cattle, and she said they've decided to leave their cattle where they are in a safe paddock on a friend's property because they just don't know what this water is going to do if we're going to see renewed floods again. And I guess that is the concern. If we see 100 mils or more in places, not only will that, you know, extend harvest even further, potentially, you know, wipe out crops, it will be very difficult for people to be able to get around, to get out to harvest, to get out to assess damage. And, you know, people just really are hoping that we don't see those falls because it's just really not needed at this point in the game now.
Because the catchments are still very wet and the rivers are still pretty high.
That's right. We've got a lot of water still. And you know, even with the Namoi receding around Gunnedah, there's still, you know, a lot of water still in that system, you know, through Narrabri, Weewaw. We've got the Gwydir as well, where, you know, we've had releases from Copeton. So there's a lot of water in that system. We've seen some flooding around places like Yarraman as well, some minor flooding. And then you look to the Breeza Plains and just the water that we've seen and shots of it from the air that's been across the Breeza Plains, and it's simply because things are just too full. And if we have any more rain, Condo, that's just going to you know, increase things further again, and there's just nowhere for the water to go but up and out at this point.
And Lara, where are you off to next?
Look, Condo, we've been to see a couple of other farmers. We're just headed back into Gunnedah, and we are about to head home for a bit of a reprieve, but we'll certainly be making our way out to Narrabri and Weewaw when we can get there. And personally, hoping to get a bit of a trip down to the Liverpool Plains as we start to get around, Condo. But, of course, we've got a lot of roads damaged in our neck of the woods too, so we're just trying to get to where we can.
Yeah, watch out for those potholes. I gather that's a real problem from the flooding too.
Absolutely. There's a lot of damaged infrastructure, roads.
Not to mention the unsealed roads.
Well, that's right. Unsealed roads are very wet and muddy. And, you know, we've seen a lot of roads that, you know, they've been quite impacted with tar taken off. You can't actually get across them at the moment. And a lot of farmers have said that that will be the next issue, is when they can harvest what they're able to harvest, actually getting, you know, contractors out to harvest and getting grain off farm is going to be a bit of a logistical nightmare as well until roads are fixed. So it's a real domino effect at this point, Condo. But I will say, so far, everyone I've spoken to, they're keeping their sense of humour, and I've had quite a few photos of farmers sitting on their decks who are isolated with a few beers watching what I quote they say are their seaside views. So so it's good to see that they're still trying to hold on to that sense of humour and trying to look at, you know, the silver linings that are about.
Lara, as always, thanks for that.
Thanks, Condo.
You're listening to The Country Hour
on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Well, as we heard there, farmers across the Liverpool Plains and northwest are frustratingly still waiting for floodwaters to recede and allow them to get a better handle on crop and infrastructure damage. Rob Winthal is a Gunnedah agronomist. He also farms near Boggabri. He told Lara Webster he had to take to the skies to get his own property, to then move machinery as the floodwater crept in.
We did have to charter a helicopter there on the weekend to fly to one place with a contractor to move some gear to higher ground. Had a friend in Boggabri who was able to get up there and put eyes on the gear yesterday morning and let us know that there was water lapping at the wheels. So we had to move quickly and, find a helicopter and get up there and move it because we couldn't actually get to it by land.
I imagine it was also difficult to try and move the gear with the amount of water and mud we've got around at the moment.
Yeah, it was a bit challenging to get it moving from the water's edge, but once we sort of got a bit of dry ground, it was actually surprising how dry the country was up there because it hadn't rained for a few days. It's just all the flood water running past it, so we were able to move it to higher ground quite easily.
When you were flying over your farms, what were you seeing from the air?
A lot of water, yeah, and you know, there was some pretty ugly sights, to be honest, in terms of where the crops are at and what they're looking like now. It's hard to say how much damage really has been done. It will be a lot, there's no denying that, but we'll just have to wait and see when we get on the ground and actually get it out there and get our hands on it.
And essentially, I suppose at this point, it really is two crops now being impacted. We've got the winter crop that's still out there, and we've got those summer plantings sitting there as well.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of summer crop around, which is sort of suffering from waterlogging at the moment. There's small areas as well, which have been sort of generally lost to water lying on it or being washed away by moving water. But yeah, there's equally a lot of summer crops you could see from the air yesterday that were actually some advanced sorghum in that in particular, and some advanced corn, which is really enjoying life and moving along quite well.
Do you think some of that more advanced crop will be able to stand up if things don't get much worse?
Yeah, I think they'll definitely stand up quite all right. And look, that was looking from the air yesterday as you flew past, but they'll handle it quite well and should be able to, you know, have minimal effect.
So upside there, I imagine with our winter crop, as you say, it's going to be some time before anyone can really get out and assess what's going on with what's yet to come off those winter paddocks.
Yeah, look, I'd like to think by mid-late this week we should be able to get around a bit and get into some of these paddocks and see what's the damage really is. Look, honestly, we just don't know for the meantime until we can get out there.
We've spoken so much about Gunnedah, we've spoken a lot about Boggabri, Narrabri, Weewaw. We haven't spoken quite as much about the Liverpool Plains around Quirindi, Breezer, all of those areas. What are you hearing from, you know, clients and farmers in those areas as well?
From what I know of the southern end of the plains, they had a pretty tough time there late last week. Some very big falls, 100 plus millimetres in an afternoon, evening, which has caused a lot of these problems we're having sort of the northern end of the plains at the moment. There's still a lot of water draining out of up there, and like I was sort of saying, a lot of infrastructure damage as well, which is going to make harvest logistics quite hard.
You are talking to a lot of people, and you yourself as a farmer, what are you hearing about how people are holding up at this point? Floods are not new to any of you, but how are people holding up as they get this second lot of water?
Look, people are a bit long in the face. It's a real kick in the guts. Like, there's a lot of promise out there for a lot of these crops. And this could have been the one that sort of really got a lot of people's feet back under them properly after the drought. But in saying that, though, there are some positives there. Like, a lot of guys got some harvesting done of some high-value, high-yielding crops prior to this rain. So that's sort of going to give them a bit of breathing space. And there's a lot of people out there which do have some summer crop in the ground as well. So there is another crop coming through for harvest in the next 3 to 5 months. So, yeah, it's swings and roundabouts.
And good news on the livestock front. While difficult for people to keep their stock high and dry at the moment,
yep,
definitely plenty of pasture going forward, I imagine.
Yeah, look, grass growth is just phenomenal at the moment. There's not enough cattle and sheep and everything out there for it, so that's a plus.
Boggabri farmer Rob Wenthal talking there to Lara Webster, 18 minutes past 12.
You're listening to The Country Hour
on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Well, to the floods elsewhere now, and the Deputy Premier and Emergency Services Minister have been in the Upper Hunter today, where locals have seen a week of flooding from Scone right the way down to Singleton. The Upper Hunter Shire has joined a long list across the state of disaster declared zones. Musselbrook and Singleton Shires are yet to join that list, though. Our Upper Hunter reporter Jake Lappin has been at Rookall and Scone to see if those politicians have been bringing their checkbooks. Jake, hello.
G'day, Condo.
So what happened at the meeting with the Deputy Premier, and any announcements there?
Yeah, well, the first stop on his Upper Hunter tour was in Singleton, and then I joined them in Rookall. They went and inspected a causeway, which was a lot more flooded on the weekend. It's subsided a lot now, but they had a look at that, met with the local mayor of Musselbrook, and inspected that causeway. They then moved to Scone, and the SES headquarters were there, where they met half a dozen volunteers and got an insight into just what they were experiencing on Friday, when a number of properties here in Scone were inundated. And it's been a very, very busy weekend for those volunteers, and some of them have even been up Moree Way out in Forbes over the last few months, and they're just flat stick. David Elliott, don't know where he was today. He was on the list, but he didn't actually turn up, so it was just Paul Toole and the local member.
Right, okay. So in terms of recovery, so water subsiding, but incredible the speed at which the floodwaters came through. Like that's a feature, I guess, of the Hunter Valley.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the SES were telling Paul Toole, is that they were surprised by how quickly it all came through. And it started up in Murrundi on Thursday night, and it was hammering down with rain, thunder and lightning, and all that rain just gradually moved down the Hunter Valley over the last few days. And that peak is now down or in the lower Hunter, Raymond Terrace kind of Newcastle way. But what Paul Toole has said is that he's expecting this sort of storms and these sort of weather events with the La Nina weather pattern to be continuing over the next few months. He's fully expecting that more disaster declarations will need to be made, because other parts of the state, I mean, the Northern Rivers and that are the focus for later this week, are going to be needing the assistance of the government.
But they are recovering. The Upper Hunter is recovering now.
Yeah, we're well and truly in recovery mode. The sun isn't out. It had a glimpse, Condo, yesterday of the sun, but we haven't seen it in about 5 days. It's been very soupy. It's just very overcast at the moment. But thankfully, the waters are receding. A lot of the roads that were previously closed have reopened, and a lot of the water has subsided out of paddocks, which is great news. But, I mean, you look at the forecast, up to 15 mil of rain tomorrow. That shouldn't pose too many problems. But what the SES and the Deputy Premier were saying is it won't take much in excess of, you know, 30 mils on already saturated catchments to renew that flooding risk.
But there is also a risk of thunderstorms as well, so not out of the woods yet. I mean, any real hints, though, of any wider support or any money or any checkbooks coming out today or any discussion?
Nothing targeted. No? Yeah, nothing targeted, Condo. What the Deputy Premier is saying is that councils need to get their paperwork into the government, and then it goes up to the federal government for their Bridget McKenzie, the federal minister's tick of approval, and then it gets declared a natural disaster zone. So that's occurred in about 13 local government areas, including the Upper Hunter. But as you say, Muswellbrook and Singleton, for whatever reason, haven't been added to that list, but we're expecting them to be over the next few days. So Paul Toole basically urging councils, get your paperwork to him, and they'll assess it as soon as possible.
Because we have heard around the state there are people that get frustrated about the time it takes for the money to start flowing in regards to this.
Yeah, the wheels of government sometimes move very slowly, and there's a lot of bureaucracy and paperwork with it meaning to go, you know, through firstly from local councils to the state government, then to the federal government. It all adds time, and when people have their homes inundated, they have, you know, wet carpets, some of them don't even have food and shelter, and roads destroyed, it can be pretty frustrating. Perhaps, you know, when all this is said and done, this La Nina is over, we may look at how these things are assessed and ways of getting money to people a bit more quick.
Are you hearing that when you talk to people? They're frustrated about that or concerned about those issues?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty. I mean, we were speaking to just on the local breakfast program. Amelia Bernasconi was chatting to someone in Cassilis who had her home flooded, and things like accommodation. I mean, Cassilis is a town of 300 people. This particular lady, Kathy, said there's no crisis accommodation in Cassilis. When her floor's being ripped up, where is she going to live? She's got dogs. They're stressed. She's stressed, and it's a stressful time. I mean, agencies like Resilience New South Wales are there, even Food Bank and the like for food. There are agencies there and there is support, but I mean, when you're struggling to put a roof over your house and you've got damp carpets and you've got no food, it can be quite a stressful time. And yeah, maybe that's something that they will look at when all this is said and done.
Jake Lappin, thanks for your time on the program today.
Thanks, Condo.
It's 24 minutes past 12. Well, staying with the flooding issues and elsewhere in the state, the bulk of the floodwater in the Lachlan River has yet to reach Hillston in the Western Riverina, but the heavy rainfall over the weekend, it's hampering the harvest already. Garlic and potato grower Douglas Rennie says the area received four times as much rain as what was forecast, and he's speaking here to reporter Luke Wong.
Started raining. We only predicted to get 40, and it didn't stop for two or three days. We ended up getting 170 mil.
Right, and so what has that done to your farm?
Oh, the whole place is underwater. The old man reckons he's been farming here for 30 years, and he's never seen water where it is. We can't get it away. It's flat. The river's full, so there's nowhere where it's draining to. Yeah, it's a bit of a disaster at the moment.
Right, so the flooding that's happening, it's not actually coming from the Lachlan River. It's actually from all the rain that's just fallen.
Yeah, like, well, we've never, if it does flood, it normally comes up and goes over the road, but this time it was over the road going the other way. I've never seen that happen before.
So how many hectares are actually affected?
Oh, the whole farm pretty much is underwater. There's no dry spots at the moment.
Right, and how much farmland is that?
over 1,000 hectares.
Right, okay. And so that's all underwater. Like, how deep is the water?
It's running off from the highest parts of the hills, but in places it's a metre deep.
What are you harvesting at the moment, or what are you trying to harvest?
We're harvesting garlic and got spuds in that'll be needing to be harvested in the next couple of weeks. That's put us back there. We might lose a lot of our garlic crop, but we'll see how we go. If you can't get on to top lift it with machines, it lays over and then, yeah, you'd struggle to pick it up.
What kind of economic effect do you think that this will have?
We've had a pretty good year as far as yield compared to other years, so we're pretty lucky in that fact. Like, we've probably got 30% of our crop still to harvest, but we've over the line with what we've already dug compared to the previous years. We're lucky in that sense.
Hillston garlic and potato grower Douglas Rennie talking there to Luke Wong. Well, growers have been scrambling to find a home for their crop after GrainCorp shut the gate to downgraded canola following the damaging rains across the state. Southern New South Wales growers were informed this week that the grain receival giant would no longer be taking low test weight canola known as CNTW at their sites. In a statement, GrainCorp Sean Barker said they were continuing to work with buyers to find a market for downgraded canola in order to determine whether or not they could take it moving forward. Roy Hamilton crops at Rand and says there's still around 80% of canola left to harvest in his region.
I'm hoping that common sense prevails. As a warehouser, hopefully GrainCorp, Rainflow and other private warehousing operations will come to the market and understand that there's still 80% of the crop, at least probably, to come off in the area in the flat country west of and southwest of Lockhart through Rand. But they will create segs that people will be able to warehouse grain and market later on. It's disappointing to have an ad hoc response without an option. I think growers are under enough stress at the moment without people closing the door on them. But look, the market in the past has always sorted this out, so hopefully that will happen sooner or later before the harvesters get going.
This year's canola crop was set to be a bumper, with record prices on offer. But a lot can change in a week, and now growers are simply looking for a home for their crop. New South Wales Farmers Grains Committee Chair Justin Everett says they're working with grain receivables to find a solution as soon as possible.
We had a lot of concerned growers about being able to deliver their grain. Just the fact that it's now outside spec and, there's not too many receival sites taking outside spec canola at the moment. And hopefully we're working on it and hopefully we'll get something done this afternoon, hopefully.
What are you hoping for?
Oh, I'm hoping that we'll find an avenue for this out of spec grain and somewhere to take it so that farmers aren't left with no income.
Because what does this really mean for farmers?
Well, the way it stands at the moment, if we've got nowhere to send this canola and no buyers, well, yeah, there's no income from that paddock. It's sort of, everyone's got a bit concerned about what they do with it. It's going to be a nightmare.
Absolutely, and I bet your phone's been going off the hook with people wondering if you've got any solutions. What could be some potential options that you are working on?
Oh, look, I guess just having somewhere to store it at the moment, take it, so that, the farmers don't have enough storage to cover what they've got, and then work on some markets, and it might mean some alternative markets, and get it sold or get it at least into a system somewhere.
So first priority is getting somewhere to actually put this grain, because as you say, a lot of people don't actually have the storage on farm, and then the next priority will be finding a market for it. What sort of markets have emerged in the past?
Yeah, there's obviously the stock food market, and hopefully they can at least find a way of crushing it and getting some decent oil. Harvest is going on right now, and there are people out there under enormous amount of stress trying to work out what to do with the grain they're currently harvesting.
The Riverina's major oil crusher has indicated they will continue to receive the downgraded canola at this stage. Riverina Oil's commodity manager Laura Sachs says their canola supply had not been affected so far, with most growers dealing with downgrades, not entire crop failures.
So we have sent a message to our growers that we are still accepting at this stage downgraded canola. So we have contracts with a lot of our local growers that have specifications around that. there are discounts in place for canola that is out of specification, but yes, at the moment we are still accepting it. We want to support our local growers and not just say to them we can't accept your seed because then, you know, they have nowhere to send it really.
And what about, we're seeing a fair bit of canola that's shot and sprung. Are you still able to accept canola that has gone through that change?
Yeah, so up to 5% shot and sprung we are still accepting, and that's per industry standard as well. And then if there's anything over 5%, it's more, you know, case-by-case basis. We're running it through our crush at the moment to see how it affects the oil yield and the oil production and things like that, because, you know, this is quite an unusual year and we want to see how that affects crushing rates and so on.
Riverina Oils deals with up to 400 growers in the region, but the recent announcement from GrainCorp means many more have got in touch.
We've obviously had a lot more growers contact us in the last couple of days. Given the GrainCorp announcement, I think a lot of the growers are, you know, feeling quite stressed and worried about what they're going to do with their seed and who will be able to accept it. So, yeah, we've had our phones ringing off the hook over the last couple of days for sure.
Do you have an estimate of how much of the crop was taken off in the region from your growers before the rain, percentage-wise?
Not much. So in the local area, maybe 10% was harvested before the rain. And I think the rain last week wasn't so bad until we got to Friday. And then Friday, the rain was just so heavy. I think that's what did the damage, was the rain last Friday.
And in this developing story, GrainCorp has just announced that they are opening up four sites to downgraded CNTW canola. These include Bribery, Ardleff and Cunningar and Milbrolong. And the company says they are hoping to open up additional sites as the week goes on. And that decision will be based on the volume and quality of what they see this week.
Olivia Carver with that report. And GrainCorp have actually said that you can, if you want further information, you can contact your local site manager or grain services. You can contact them on 69268470 about your canola, 69268470. So that's the latest information on that developing story. It's 28 minutes to one here on the Country Hour. Shortly we'll have some weather details, some records for rainfall for November for quite a number of sites around the state. That's not surprising, I don't think. Let's find out what's happening elsewhere in the news. Adam Story, good afternoon.
Remember what the sun looked like?
It's been a while.
I'm having trouble. It came out for about 5 seconds yesterday and blinded me, and then went away again.
La Nina again. La Nina. So it's going to be cloudy over this summer, I think, everywhere this year. Yeah.
Anyway, the good news, well, there's no good news. There's a fifth case of Omicron in New South Wales. The confirmed case is a woman in her 30s who arrived in Sydney on Saturday before the new travel restrictions were in place. She travelled to at least two Southern African countries prior to arriving. Now, the government has moved to delay allowing international students and skilled migrants into the country. In response to this new strain, Professor Paul Kelly says the change is only temporary, and experts are still trying to determine whether vaccines are effective against this strain and how quickly it spreads and how severe the cases are. At this stage, there's no reports of any fatalities or hospitalisations as a result, so fingers crossed. In other news, an independent review has found one in three people employed in a Commonwealth parliamentary workplace has experienced some form of sexual harassment while working there. This has come from a review by the Discrimination Commissioner, Kate Jenkins, who launched the review following the allegations by former Liberal staffer Brittany Higgins. Now, the reports found over half of all people in parliamentary workplaces have experienced at least one incident of bullying, sexual harassment, or attempted or actual sexual assault. And the Teachers Federation says it's going to ignore an Industrial Relations Commission order to stop a planned strike next week. Public school teachers have voted in favour of the strike on December the 7th over staffing shortages and pay. Mm. I'm not sure whether that's they're playing a full day strike or.
It's a courageous decision.
Nonetheless.
if they're going to go ahead without the imprimatur of the Fair Work Commission. So, yes. We'll see what happens
with
that.
Some intense talks over the next few days, I'd imagine.
Right. Okay. They're not backing down.
No.
Not yet. All right. Okay, thanks for that. Adam's story there with the news headlines. He'll be back at 1 o'clock as usual. Let's find out what's happening with the weather details. Now, as we were saying earlier, not surprising that quite a number of centres have seen record rainfalls. David Wilkie, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Michael. How are you going?
Very well. So very wet and not surprising records tumbling. Whereabouts? Give us a bit of a snapshot. I think you've got a list there, haven't you?
Yeah, I do. I got the climatologist to get us a list. So I guess, the broad headline is that it looks like wettest November on record for New South Wales in general. So the previous record was 1917, but it looks like that record's fallen in terms of just widespread rain.
Oh, right.
And also the
wettest for over 100 years and the wettest on record now.
Yeah, the wettest we have on record, and the previous record was 1917. So roughly, we've had about three times our average rainfall for November across New South Wales. And as you said, many areas getting their record rainfall. So most of the areas were sort of concentrated around the sort of ACT, Southwest Slopes, and the Central and Southern Tablelands. But, yeah, a few, I guess, places worth mentioning. So, in particular, for example, Orange. So, the old record was set in 2005. They've had 56 years of data there, but it was set in 2005 at 204 mils. They've got 307 this month. So, yeah, about 100 mils on top of the record, which is pretty significant for Orange. And, obviously, that's been a big part of the kind of flood that's moved through the Lachlan, for example. Areas in the central west, or it's aided that, obviously, that amount of rainfall. Another couple of places, so Canberra Airport, 152 mils, so that eclipses the previous record, 138. Bathurst got 241 mils this month, which beats the record, which actually set in 1961 of 195. So, yeah, there's a few places. Cowra is another spot. Forbes got their record, 172 mils compared to 136. So, yeah, very very wet November in general for pretty much the whole of New South Wales. But certainly some places seeing much higher than what they've ever seen before in November, or that we've recorded before in November.
And we've heard that. We've heard that from farmers who said, they've been farming 50 years and never seen this much water, that sort of thing. So we that's backed up by some anecdotal evidence as well. But 1917, I mean, people talk about 1974, I think, as being an extremely wet year, but obviously pales into insignificance in relation to this one.
Yeah, well, this is just the November, so I guess that's important to remember. It's just the November data, but certainly it is. Yeah, it's significant, and considering that we've been keeping records on this for 100 plus years, and this is the wettest that we've seen it. And a number of these stations, like I said, they've got quite a bit of data. So Tumut's another one that's had 133 years. I think that's one of the longest. Longest series of data with a record broken. So they got 213 millimetres this month, and that compares with 176, which was the previous record. But 133 years that they've had records going, and this was the wettest month.
Yeah, right. Okay, so wettest November. Now, what can we expect in the future?
Yeah, well, that's a little bit more difficult to answer. it does look a bit like we're going to see continuation of wet and stormy conditions for a lot of areas, but just exactly when you'll get showers and rain will obviously depend on the movement of a trough which is sitting through the inland. So we are in a fairly wet and stormy period, I guess it's worth reiterating, and there's not a really good clearing trend of this. So while we will see for a lot of places, we'll see days where it eases off and comes back, we're just going to see showers and storms through New South Wales for sort of the next week.
Is it going to centre? Is it going to centre in the north, and are they going to see a lot of rain up there?
Yeah, so today is probably the day today and tomorrow are probably the wettest days. So we currently have a trough which is sitting through the inland. It's generating quite a bit of storm activity through inland parts, but not a lot of rainfall yet today. And there's also areas of rain which are moving into the northeast now. What we're expecting today is that we'll see rain sort of extend further into the kind of northern tablelands, northwest slopes and northern rivers through the course of today, and that'll be sort of the area where we'll see the heaviest falls. But much of New South Wales could see a shower or a storm today. Into tomorrow it sort of contracts to eastern parts, And then that's sort of the pattern as well for Thursday, but we do have potential showers over southwest developing on Thursday as well. And then really for sort of the weekend, there's kind of just ongoing showers and storms around. Hopefully, you know, it's not going to be something that it's not going to be like continuous rain for most places. We'll see just showers and storms through the day, but we just have an unstable atmosphere, and that's sort of what happens when you have an unstable atmosphere. You get, you know, usually quite isolated, but yeah, persistent showers and storms that are just sort of regenerating each day, particularly during the afternoon.
Right, and this is nothing in terms of the 7-day forecast about fining up or sunny weather or warming up or anything like that.
Well, conditions will be warming a little bit over the next couple of days for a lot of places. So we're going to see some quite warm temperatures developing through tomorrow and Thursday, particularly in the west of the state. We're getting temperatures reaching about 40 degrees in the far northwest. There's a bit of a cool change which moves through the coastal parts on Saturday, but yeah, what we're not seeing is a big frontal system which can just clear things out and bring in a lot of dry air behind it. And so without that, we're just going to persistently have this kind of wetter atmosphere around, which, yeah, it's generally a bit cooler, typically. I mean, we're seeing warmer conditions over the next couple of days, but generally a little bit cooler and generally a little bit more on the showery, stormy side. So, yeah, no really significant changes, but today and tomorrow are certainly the wettest for the north and northeast and probably the most active in terms of severe thunderstorms. So I think that's probably the main, you know, the main distinction is, yeah, today and tomorrow do look wetter and they do look more stormy, but there will be a risk of showers and storms, you know, in parts of New South Wales and broad parts of New South Wales for the coming week.
Okay, David, thanks for that.
No problem, thank you.
David Wilkie at the Bureau there. It's 19 to 1.
The Country Hour on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Well, we were talking about the roads earlier. Road closures now, and in the central west, some roads out of Forbes are still closed, including the Henry Lawson Way and the Lachlan Valley Way. In the northwest, the Camilla Roy Highway is still closed between Boggabri and Gunnedah. Clifton Road is closed between Breezer and Carroll. Several roads are closed out of Narrabri, including the Camilla Roy Highway from Weewar to Walgett and Walgett to Pilliga. The Killarney Gap Road is closed between Narrabri and Bingara, and further north there's heavy rain and what's described as long-term flooding is closing roads near the Queensland border around Boggabrilla. So that's the latest on the roads. It's 18 minutes to 1 on the New South Wales Country Hour. Well, the future for digital ag is being discussed today at the University of Sydney. And in the cropping space, it's more powerful computers that are available now that can measure available water and then predict a cropping outcome using modelling and likely scenarios. It could be very helpful for farming. Professor Tom Bishop at the University of Sydney says, even in a difficult year like this one, where we've seen record rainfall and flooding, that sort of technology may help with decision-making about what crop to grow and how much to plant and when to plant it.
So in terms of cropping, the biggest issue farmers face is uncertainty about water, the amount of water they have in the soil now and in the upcoming season. So there's, you know, in the last decade or so, there's more remote sensing platforms that can be used to help estimate basically soil water anywhere in Australia, or actually the global platforms anywhere in the world. One of the more exciting things, using remote sensing and modelling to predict nowcast soil water.
Because we've heard a lot about, you know, obviously the drought and, you know, you can't get computers to make it rain. Is it to maybe get a long-term forecast about when it might rain and when it might be wet, too wet or too dry?
If you know how much soil water you have now, you can use that to get a better idea of the future season, as you suggest. So you can get a better estimate of the potential yield and then try and match your fertilizer to that amount. If you had to pick one property for a grain grower to know, you'd probably go with soil water. If they could know that across their fields, they can make many decisions about their production system.
So if they've got a lot of subsoil moisture and they can bank on maybe having a 20 decile year in rainfall and they know they're still going to get a decent crop, then it's a goer. If they have a lot less than that, they might sit it out for a year.
Yeah, well, then, they determine, you know, do you sow a crop or do you not sow a crop? And also the idea is we can estimate the soil water as it changes through the season, so they still have an option, you know, mid-season to, they could put out half their fertilizer, a bit of risk-averse strategy there, and then decide based on that mid-season estimate where they want to go for the rest of the season. So it's not just at the beginning of the season, but it's, you know, these regular estimates we can provide during the season.
So it's hedging your bets a bit too on what you've got, what you might get, and I guess to put in a crop, all the fertilizer, all the seed, it's expensive.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest, you know, 40% of the cost, I believe, is nitrogen in many cases, of, you know, so deciding how much to apply, and also not only how much to apply, but where to apply it in the field. So the idea is we can, for different locations in the field, we can give a soil water estimate and get a yield potential for different parts of the field. So it's not just a uniform rate across a farm for all soil types.
But what about improved weather forecasting too, or computer use of that, or, you know, that would help too, surely?
Yeah, so with, you know, you can do a lot with a nowcast, you know, knowing how much there is now, but then, you know, we're also working, you know, others are working, Bureau of Meteorology, on the improved seasonal forecasts. So the idea is not just to predict the future state of rainfall, you know, for the season, but to predict the trajectory of soil moisture through the season. So, yeah, it's using machine learning and the improved seasonal forecast from the Bureau of Meteorology.
So, like, they can use it for, like, a modelling. They can model the 3 months out or 6 months out. We've got La Nina at the moment. It's going to be wetter than average till autumn. That should help people make some decisions.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know your profile could be 50% full now, but based on the seasonal forecast, you know, mid-seasonal.
Some profiles are 150% at the moment.
Yes, ironically, that is the problem now. It's a very bad problem.
But I guess the thing is that there is water in the dams, and people are looking at the bright side. They're saying there's going to be water around, in a few months' time, or when it's dry in warming up at the end of next year.
Yeah, well, you know, the northern grain systems, they rely on summer rainfall to replenish the soil water. So, you know, the positive is they're well set up for next year's winter crop. They've got a lot of water now.
And what sort of machinery or computers does the average farmer need to do all this?
This would be delivered through consultants. You can imagine a decision support, like a little widget. You know, there's various ag tech companies out there. Some have been around for decades. And, you know, just as they, you know, they hold all the growers' yield data or other data, you know, you can imagine a little widget you could subscribe to estimate your soil water, get a yield potential, you know, in the future. I suppose that's where we're heading. So they wouldn't be using, yeah, it'd just be like, you know, you look up, you know, your Apple Health, you see how many steps you've done today. It's some widgets like that would give you estimates of soil water, and then they would have to interpret that with their agronomists or something like that.
So it's not something that you could have built into your header or something like, or your, you know, or other farm equipment. You'd need to get a consultant.
A lot of good old-fashioned agronomy can be performed if you're given a soil water estimate. You know, so that's what we give. The idea of this is to give a soil water estimate. You could value add with a yield potential, but, you know, then, you know, it's up to the farmer or with their consultant, or if they do it by themselves, to contextualize that for their own situation.
So how different is this to, you know, what people used to do 20 years ago? How far have we come?
I think the biggest change is computing power, in that you can scale this across large, you know, regions. So that's one thing. There's been a lot of investment in the underlying soil information in Australia. So there's soil maps, more detailed soil maps across Australia. And the other step change is remote sensing. You know, there's a lot of freely available remote sensing platforms that are, they're free now, whereas, you know, 25 years ago, you'd pay $2,000 for a small image. So, you know, basically every day, every 5 days, you get an image of the Earth's surface, anywhere on the Earth's surface. So, I mean, I think that's a big step change as well. So you can use, you know, they're measuring what's on the surface, so the vegetation, so that can, they're used in, say, soil water balance models to get a better prediction of soil water. So computing power, remote sensing, and investments in underlying soil data sets across Australia, and also weather as well. Bureau of Meteorology have invested heavily in, you know, providing better estimates of weather.
And are these productivity increases that we're seeing or likely to see, are they going to be able to offset against, if we do have climate change and global warming and less rainfall?
Yeah, well, that's, I think it'll become more important to do that. If, you know, if it's all about managing variability. So, you know, if you have a better idea of your soil water estimates, you can, I suppose, you don't put as much fertilizer on if you don't have much soil water and you have a bad season coming ahead. So you can sort of hedge your bets, as you suggested earlier on. So, yeah, I think it's probably even more essential to be able to estimate soil water.
As long as you're not sitting out 9 years out of 10.
Yes, that is the other issue. But, you know, in that situation, there's the other part of that is breeding. You know, hopefully there's a lot of advances in breeding. You have more drought-resistant varieties, the heat-tolerant varieties of wheat, for example. So, you know, they can maybe, we can, rather than being 9 years and 10, based on current varieties, we can maybe go to, you know, 5 years and 10 or 4 years and 10.
Professor Tom Bishop at Sydney University, there's a symposium looking at digital ag at the moment. We'll probably have a few more stories on that this week on the Country Hour. It's coming up to 10 minutes to one. We'll go to markets shortly, but before we do that, one of the Mid-North Coast's largest food manufacturing factories has announced it's made the switch to run off 100% renewable energy. The Nestlé Smithtown factory, also known as the home of Milo, has entered into a 10-year power purchase agreement with CWP Renewables, sourcing its power from their wind farms across the state. Louisa Rubo spoke to factory manager Matthew Oram, who says that the move to clean energy is happening company-wide to meet the brand's 50% emissions reduction target by 2030.
It's a part of the Nestlé Global program to reach net zero emissions by 2050, and Nestlé Australia have entered into an agreement with CWP Renewables to supply electricity that is 100% derived from wind farms, and that's across not only the Nestlé site here at Smithtown, but across all its operations within Australia.
And how will you access this electricity produced by wind power then?
Yeah, look, it's a purchasing agreement, so that these generators input their supply to the grid, and all the power that we consume from the electricity grid is has a complete offset by wind farm generation.
Starting when?
It's already commenced, so it's in effect. The agreements have been signed off. It's been a recent commitment to seal up the total supply chain of Nestlé Australia. So now that that's done, we're confident to say that all our operations from now on are being supplied their electricity through these wind farms.
So what's happening now?
It's happening now.
Are you one of the first to switch over to this, or are other companies around the world, Nestlé companies, already doing this?
Yeah, look, we certainly wouldn't be the first that use renewable electricity to supply their factories. But the global initiative is a much wider initiative, and it's saying that by 2050, Nestlé globally will have zero greenhouse gas emission impacts to the environment. So that's across not just our operations, but our supply chain, distributions, etc.
That was Nestlé's Smithtown factory manager, Matthew Oram. It's coming up to 7 minutes to one. That's time for markets. Let's go to Forbes Sheep and Lambs and Crystal Ridley.
Numbers dropped this hour with agents yarning just 8,250 head. 6,200 lambs penned and quality was mixed, though there were some good runs of export lambs on offer. Most of the usual buyers are present competing in a variable market. There was 1,000 new seasonal lambs penned with prices ranging from 172 to 258, while restockers paid up to 196. Old lambs fluctuated in price, trade weights holding fairly steady, with those to 24 kilos selling from 170 to 222. Heavy and extra heavyweight lambs lifted $5 to $8, with prices ranging from 223 to 310. Carcass prices average remained 70 to 922 cents. There was 2,050 mutton penned, and quality was similar to previous sales. Merino ewes sold from 145 to 195, crossbreds receiving from 148 to 250, with Dorper ewes reaching 209. This has been Crystal Ridley at Forbes from LA.
Let's go to Carcor Cattle now, and David Monk.
Following a week of wet weather, numbers were back by 530 for a yarding of 890. It was a mostly good quality yarding with, once again, a good selection of ideal feeders, along with fair numbers to suit the processes. There was a limited selection of grass steers and heifers, and there were around 170 cows penned. Young cattle of the trade were firm to 5 cents dearer, with prime vealers selling to 583. Prime yearlings sold from 456 to 570. Lightweight feeder steers and feeder heifers were 13 cents dearer, while the heavier feeder steers were firm to 2 cents dearer. Feeder steers sold from 493 to 588, while feeder heifers sold from 470 to 573. Ground steers were firm to 5 cents cheaper, while the ground heifers were 8 cents dearer. Prime ground steers sold from 420 to 470, while prime ground heifers sold from 422 to 492. Cows were 10 cents cheaper, with the three scores selling from 340 to 378. Prime heavyweight cows sold from 375 to 405 to average 386. Heavy bull sold to 359. This is David Monk at CTLX for MLA.
Let's go to Scone Cattle now and Neil Geddes.
Afternoon, numbers double compared to the last rain-affected market for 435 cattle. Quality on average good. Extra weight in the younger cattle, they were more suitable for the feeder buyers. Trends overall dearer, with online competition strong. Over 200 kilogram vealer steers to the restockers 5 cents dearer, 620 to 816 cents a kilogram. Same way vealer heifers also to the restockers firm, 636 to 740 cents a kilogram. Medium weight yearling steers to the feeders dearer trends, 480 to 660 cents. Heifer portion of feed sold well, 526 to 560 cents a kilogram. The prime high yielding younger cattle of the butchers, extra competition this week. The best heavy yearling heifer reached 578 cents a kilogram. Heavy bullocks trended dearer, 420 to 440 cents. Cows also trended dearer, yield very good. Heavy weights, 370 to 410 cents. The best heavyweight bull, 358 cents a kilogram. Neil Geddes, Scone Cattle for the MLA.
Let's go to Wodonga now, Leanne Dax.
Good afternoon. 1,480 cattle were yarded at Wodonga. Quality was very good to fair. Heavy export cattle were well supplied with plenty of weight on offer. Trade cattle were in reasonable numbers with a good selection of veal in each agent's run. Veal were 3 to 4 cents easier, 520 to 586. Trade steers were back 10. 488 to 524. Feeder steers slipped 4 cents, 491 to 547. Trade heifers were unchanged, 444 to 530. Feeder heifers, 464 to 525. Heavy steers were unchanged, 440 to 510. Bullocks eased back 4, 434 to 485. Heavy cows improved 3 cents, 378 to 396. And the middle run held firm, 330 to 396. I'm Leanne Dax, MLA.
And, of course, no Gunnedah cattle sale because it's the second week in a row, in fact. And some of the old-timers are saying they can't remember even when a flood affected the cattle market that it was not operating for 2 weeks in a row. So that's the situation with Gunnedah. Let's go to Inverell, finally, and Stephen Adams.
Good afternoon. Inverell numbers increased considerably to 1,208 head, an extra 1,100 head after a break in the rain events. Young cattle in the majority and a healthy rise in cow numbers. All the regular buyers attended, along with an extra feeder buyer. Weaners saw a cheaper trend, however. Restockers were still active, steers to 835, heifers 570 to 644. Feeder steers through all categories sold a much dearer trends, 470 to 664. Backgrounders also with strong demand, 530 to 650. Heavy yearling steers to process, 446 to 456. Similar trends through the heifer offering, feeders 598 to 624, and restockers also strong, 540 to 594. Ground steers to process, 424 to 451, heifers to 548. Cows sold to dearer trends, heavy 3 and 4 score cows, 400 to 415 cents a kilo, up 12 cents. A very heavy sea muscle cow to 420. Restockers push cows to the paddock to 396 cents a kilo, heavy bulls dearer 320 to 379 to process. Stephen Adams, MLA at Inverell.
And as I said, no Gunnedah sale this week, or hasn't been for a couple of weeks. Someone's texted in on the rain, said they've had steady rain 10 minutes east of Tenterfield, 194 millimetres for November. The total for the year, in fact, has been 1,146. They normally get 900 millimetres, but there hasn't been any damage. That one from Colin. Also text saying, thank you for not whinging about the rain. And Jason's made the point Maybe it might have been one of the coolest years also that we've seen, or certainly coolest months of November in any case, and a few other texts coming through as well. You've been listening to The Country Hour, and we'll be back tomorrow between 12 and 1. You can always check out the latest and check out some amazing photos on the Facebook page. Just head to Facebook and search for ABC Rural. We'll talk to you tomorrow between 12 and 1. News time coming up.